In Shir 19, we are going to get into detail regarding the laws of basar b'chalav, meat, and milk. Diane Grunfeld states that the law of basar b'chalav has rightly been described as one of the most successful heralds of the Torah in the Jewish home, and whose task it is to create a spirit of loyalty to the religious, legal, and moral principles of Jewish life in the minds of the members of our faith. Now, he gets this both from Rambam and from Rav Hirsch. The halachos of basar b'chalav are also a testing ground of our amunas chachamim and the traditional explanation of the written law vis-a-vis the oral law. Much of our Jewish way of life is dependent on this relationship between the two. We learn the halachos of basar b'chalav from the phrase, Lo siva shel gidi b'chalev imo, you should not cook a goat, it's literally a kid, in its mother's milk. And this pasuk is repeated 3 times. Now, the first 2 times it is preceded by bikurim in the Torah, and the 3rd time by the laws of nevela. The first 2 times, in context, it's not dealing with dietary laws per se, but the 3rd time is. Now, the Gemara in Chulin learns the following from these psukim. First, we may not boil milk and meat together, that's Isser Bishel. Second, we may not eat the mixture, which is Isser Achila. And finally, we are not allowed to have any benefit from the mixture, which is Isser Hana. The Gemara learns that the phrase Gidi, a young goat, actually includes all tahor animals, whether young or old. And the Torah does this often. It tells us a case in a certain way, since that is or was common, but it's really more inclusive than the actual wording implies. The phrase is Diber Hakasuv Behove, or there's another phrase that the Torah speaks Bilshon B'nei Adam, in man's language. So both of these phrases explain to us why the Torah would write something where it doesn't mean it exactly as it says it, but rather we expand on it. The Torah further says, b'chalev imo, in its mother's milk. And we don't take this at face value either. All milk from a kosher animal is included in the prohibition. The prohibition does not apply to a non-kosher species of meat with kosher milk, or to kosher meat with prohibited milk. As it's fairly well known, from the Torah itself, the prohibition applies only to behemos, but midrabana, it also applies to chayos and to ophos. When it comes to the prohibition of basar b'chalav, the Torah does not use negative expressions as it does by other dietary laws. So for example, the Torah uses such phrases as al tishak tsues nafsho sechem, you should not make your souls abominable. So phrases like that we see by other dietary laws, but here the Torah does not say any such type of language. And we know that meat and milk by themselves are both perfectly permissible, and it's only when they're together that we are not allowed to have them. So one approach, which we discussed earlier, we could say that mixing milk and meat is usher due to the requirement of limino, which we explained to be the law of species, which does not allow us to interfere in the natural order of the universe. Other laws that fall into this category include klaim, we're not allowed to mix seeds, wool and linen, or different types of animals with each other. So for example, a mule is a cross between a horse and a donkey. A Jew is allowed to use such an animal, but you may not create it. According to this understanding of milk and meat, such a mixture interferes both with the individual's inner personality structure and also the harmonious structure of the universe. He is machish b'maisi bereishis. So before we referred to these concepts as microcosmos and macrocosmos. So this idea is in accordance with the mystical understanding of mitzvos, which we discussed. And again, that states that since the Torah is the blueprint of the universe, our actions have cosmic influence. Now, another theory is that this dietary law is the same as all other dietary laws, and its purpose is to influence character structure and holiness. So, in other words, moral perfection. We find that the rule of Trefa in Shmos 22:30, where the Torah says, "Va'anshei kodesh tiyun li, uvasar ba'asodet terefa lo sochil, va'kelev tashlichun oso." The clear indication from this pasuk is that Trefa refers to the holiness which is mentioned in the pasuk, and this comes at the end of a chapter speaking about social legislation. Right, it's in the parasha of Mishpatim. This teaches us that social justice depends on one's moral character. We find that the three psukim we mentioned regarding meat and milk also revolve around kedusha. So, with all of these surrounding psukim mentioning holiness, we can assume that the Torah's intent is not to teach us something mystical or symbolic, but to teach us morality and holiness. The next question we need to address is why does the Torah use such odd phraseology to tell us not to cook meat and milk together? Instead of saying, "Do not cook a kid in its mother's milk," the Torah could have written, much more simply, "Do not boil meat and milk, eat the mixture, and derive any benefit from it." Why do you have to go through this very interesting sounding verse and repeat it three times? According to Rambam, the Torah only mentions cooking and not eating to teach us that even cooking is aser, and all the more so eating is prohibited as well. Rav Hirsch writes that since we know that even cooking is forbidden, we see that the law of milk and meat is not a typical dietary law, but is part of the law of species, which we referred to earlier. A support for this is that if one did cook milk and meat together, it must be buried, and if it's burnt, even the ashes are prohibited from use. Okay, so the next question is why the Torah specifies a kid, a goat? In reality, if it means any meat, why be so specific? We already stated that the Torah speaks behoveh, it speaks in generalities in regard to what is common. But Rav Hirsch, he takes a different approach and says that the Torah gives this example since it's an extreme. The Torah is telling us that even this meat and this milk that were once intimately connected must remain apart. If you look up Rav Hirsch on Shmos 23:19, he goes into great detail in explaining this entire pasuk, and he expands on this concept as well. Others say that this is the most concise manner for the Torah to express itself, since the pasuk refers only to kosher meat and kosher milk and nothing else. This approach is taken by Haksav HaKabbalah, and Rav Hirsch mentions this as well. Rav David Zvi Hoffman and Haksav HaKabbalah see that the word imo is essential to the text, since the Sefer Habris was the first written material that the Bnei Yisrael ever had. It was written well before anything in the Torah was written. They had this Sefer Habris, and therefore there wasn't any oral tradition on how the Sefer Habris should be read. The word imo makes it clear that the word before it should be read as chalev and not as chelev. So that's very interesting. Finally, one other approach we will mention is that of Philo, believe it or not, since his understanding is agreed upon by Ramban, Abarbanel, Rashbam, and others, and that is that the Torah is impressing on us the cruel nature of cooking a young animal in its mother's milk, and that such an act would leave a deleterious impression on the perpetrator. It is mitamtem es halev, which is interesting because over here you're not actually even eating it. It's something that you are doing. We're saying the action that you're doing, not what you're consuming, but what you're doing is mitamtem es halev. I'm not sure I've ever seen it used in that way before. So according to these commentators, that is why the Torah uses this language to express itself. Okay, let's now look at some of the more practical aspects of meat and milk, but again, only in broad terms. The issur of having a milk and meat mixture, as we pointed out, is only from a kosher animal, and this is a chiddush in that the ingredients are permitted, but the mixture is usr, right? So any kosher animal in terms of its milk or any kosher animal in terms of its meat will give you this isr. Since that is the case, that both items are permitted, it is possible that one will mistakenly eat a milk and meat mixture, and therefore, in order to avoid this, our Chachamim instituted precautionary measures to help us avoid such situations. All Jewish homes have separate utensils for meat and dairy, and on a more industrial level, it is common to have separate kitchens for meat and dairy. It's common to make sure that the two sets of utensils look physically different from each other so that they are not confused. And we have a third set of utensils that are parv, or neutral, and they're not used with either dairy or meat. And we also use different tablecloths for meat and for dairy. If two people are eating at the same table and one is having dairy and the other is having meat, certain precautions need to be taken in order to ensure they will not share or confuse their food with the other one, such as having a separate tablecloth for each one, separate dishes, some sort of object that keeps them cognizant of the fact that they may not share, as well as other precautions which you could look up in any basic kashrus book for the details of these halachos. Now, we wait some amount of time between consuming meat and eating milk, and there are a number of different customs in regard to the amount of time that one should wait, and they're all based on one Gemara. There is actually very little on this topic in our earlier literature. The first mention that we have of waiting between meat and milk is from two Amorayim in Bavel. And I point out that they are from Bavel since we know that Ashkenazim come from Eretz Yisrael, not from Bavel. And the Ashkenaz custom in regard to waiting, in essence, is very Mekel. The Gemara in Chulin quotes Mar Ukva as saying that he is not as great as his father, since his father used to wait Me'is La'is 24 hours between eating meat and milk, and he, Mar Ukva, only waits from one meal to the next. And the exact language of the Gemara is L'su'udasa achrita achilna. So the question is, what does this mean and who does it apply to? So Rambam understands this to mean that one must wait 6 hours between eating meat and having milk. And it seems that the Rambam is the very first commentator to mention anything regarding 6 hours. Now remember, Rambam is a Sephardi, and one has to wonder how such an opinion became so accepted and prevalent among Ashkenazim, especially considering that the early Ashkenaz poskim were not makbid on waiting such long intervals. And now, that's not necessarily true across the board, but we find that the Bali Tosfos, they hold that you basically need to bench, and that's called Misu'uda L'su'uda, from one meal to the next. So based on this, the Ashkenaz custom of waiting 1 hour became established. Now there are several other customs in between, including 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours plus. I'll just put it out there that the German custom of waiting 3 hours, which so many people rail on, is either a chumrah on Tosfos' opinion, or it's an explanation of what it means from one meal to the next. It's mentioned in one Rishon, and both Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Shach encourage individuals not to abandon the 3-hour custom for the chumrah of 6 hours. Either way, each family should stick to their custom. If your family waits 6 hours, then unless you consult with the posek, you need to continue waiting 6 hours. Now, I do have a lot of information on this, and I'd be happy to discuss it if you send me an email. My point is not that anyone should abandon 6 hours, just that if you wait 3 hours, don't be so fast to disregard it as wrong or as not firm or something along those lines. Because us Yekas, we have a lot of chumros, and our kulos are holy as well. It's not something that should just necessarily be thrown away lightly. Now, regardless of this entire conversation, everyone agrees you need to bench. You may not wait whatever time period and then have milk products without officially ending your meal. And finally, one should make sure that there is no residue in their mouth from meat. And if there is, then you're going to need to eat bread or brush your teeth. You basically have to make sure that your mouth is clean. Now, let's discuss the opposite situation of eating meat after milk. In terms of halacha, there is no need to wait between milk and meat, and it suffices just to wash your hands and rinse your mouth. There is a custom to wait a minimal amount of time between milk and meat. Some wait 15 minutes, some wait a half an hour, others do not wait at all. If a person eats cheese which is aged for 6 months or more, then you need to wait whatever amount of time you normally wait between meat and milk. And one can find more information on aged cheese and the halachas that apply to it through the OU or other kashrus agencies. In terms of neutral utensils, we are accustomed to having a parv bread knife. The Gemara considers it dangerous to eat meat and fish together, or even to cook meat and fish in the same utensils. We generally either use separate utensils for meat and fish, or you wash off the cutlery before partaking of the other type. Now, the next sections deal with meat and milk touching each other, both in terms of cold food and hot food, the status of vessels in which milk and meat are mixed, and finally, what happens if you mix up milk and meat utensils while washing them. These laws are really beyond our brief halachic discussion here, and once again I refer you to various kashrus agencies or sfarim, including the sefer we're learning now, that discuss these halachos. And this concludes our discussion of meat and milk. And the next year we'll take a look at mixtures known as ta'aruvos.